Welcome to the Nerd Party.
In business, as in life, loyalty should never be rewarded with complacency. With a Barclays business account, the longer you stay with us, the more of your monthly bank charges we'll give you back. It's called Loyalty Reward, and it's our thank you to businesses for being a customer. We just think that's business common sense. To find out about moving your business account to Barclays, visit us in branch or go online at barclays.co.uk/businesscommonsense. Terms and conditions apply, only available on selected price plans.
Hello, I'm Matt Hansen.
And I'm Lee Hutchison.
And welcome to the Senate floor.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of the filibuster on the Senate floor. And as you could probably tell from our intro, a little tiny independent movie came out this weekend that Lee and I are just dying to talk about. That would be, of course, the new Marvel release, Captain America Civil War.
I mean, where did this film come from? I've not heard anything about this. I turned up to the cinema last week and, well, I thought it was either between that or Bad Neighbors 2. So I thought, I'm going to give this film a go. I like to support independent cinema. So I thought, I'm going to see this movie. It had a bunch of unknowns as the cast. So, wow, I was surprised by that.
And I don't know about you, but when I walked in, I was like, this little Marvel Disney company is going to go places.
Well, I think so. It's the little engine that could.
Right. But anyway, I mean, of course we're joking. I mean, this has been, if you've been listening to either Filibuster or the main Senate floor, this has been like my number one most anticipated release this year. Hot off the heels of what I considered up to this point to be the best Marvel movie, Captain America Winter Soldier. I won't say where Civil War places for me just yet. You'll have to keep on listening to see how it compares. But let's just say I was very, very excited going in. So Lee, before we start talking about the movie itself, let's talk about things that we always talk about on the Senate floor when it comes to movies we go to see. How was the theater experience?
Yeah.
So what was your theater experience like?
Well, mine was already superior because I got to see it before the Americans, which is always a plus.
But, I follow you on Twitter, Lee, and not only were you quite proud of that, all your friends that you follow were quite proud of that as well.
Yeah, all us Brits were getting to be our usual smug self, so that's always an opportunity for us to feel superior to our American cousins. But I went to see it a week before you last, about two Thursdays ago, on the 28th. And I did the marathon. I had work in the morning. I was invigilating an exam. And all I could think of during this exam was, I wasn't fussed if the students were cheating. They could have done whatever. I was so focused about this movie. So I went into the cinema at 2 o'clock. And I saw First Avenger. Always loved that movie. The smile on my face when Star Spangled Man came on was just, it was filling up the whole cinema. Then after that, we went into the Avengers. Then we got our dinner. So we got some money off a chicken place here called Nando's. So I was sitting there ready for Winter Soldier with a big chicken Caesar salad right in front of me. So no popcorn for me. Winter Soldier killed it as always. I was a bit surprised to see no one had their earphones in listening to our audio commentary for Winter Soldier while watching it at the cinema. So don't know what's going on there. And then into Age of Ultron. So that finished about 20 to midnight. And as I'd mentioned before, the marathon involved showing Civil War at midnight, but I wanted to go see it in the IMAX, so I ran from the cinema.
Yeah, you crazy person. So you bought a ticket to this marathon,
yeah,
but it wasn't going to be the place where you saw Civil War. You had to get up and go to another theater to see Civil War.
I wanted to go see an IMAX first and foremost, so I went along to the IMAX. It was queued out the door, it was packed, the IMAX was open, couple of 2D screens, couple of 3D screens, so I managed to get there. Thankfully there was a bus just arrived at the right time outside the marathon to take me to the other side of the town for the cinema. So I got there all sweating, just like, oh my god, oh my god. I look like Captain America when he comes out of the tube for the first time. So I got in, I got my art cards for the IMAX release, which you're getting at AMC in the next like 3 Sundays in a row, but we got them all in one night. So then I sat down, watched it in IMAX, and I got out about 3 in the morning. And while I woke up the next day absolutely shattered, it was so worth it. I had such a great time in that marathon, and I had a great time.
Hold off on your thoughts on the movie. I just, you know, so the theater experience was good. Like, and you know, before you comment on how you felt on the movie, you told me that your normally stoic British audience was actually really into it. Is that correct?
Yep. It got not one, but two round of applauses. When was the first one? The first one was at the end, and then the last one was at the final post scene. So we usually reserve applauses for Les Mis, King's Speech. It's not really something that's done here for big superhero movies or blockbusters, anything like that. So to get two applauses was pretty impressive. So a rare sign.
Yeah, that's a good indication going forward. Well, my theater experience was much like Lee's, except I'm a lot crazier, as you can expect. So I know there's going to be a lot of judgment out there among the listeners at this point, and believe me, no one judges me more harshly than myself. Let me just put that up front. But I did something very similar to Lee, where this was going to be my very last opportunity to do one of these marathons. I had never done it before. And with me going back to school in the fall this year, I just simply wouldn't have the money or the time to do it again. So I thought, it's now or never, and, you know, might as well do it now, because this is my most anticipated movie release. And why not do it now when I know I'm going to end on a good movie? You know, this has gotten great reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. I thought, okay, we're going to end on a good movie, and I'm so excited, and Captain America is my favorite Avenger. We'll do it for now. So I went to this marathon and had the same lineup that you did, Lee. We started with First Avenger, into Avengers, Winter Soldier, Age of Ultron, and then we ended with Civil War. Although we timed it so that the marathon started like super early in the morning. I took the day off of work. It started at 8:45 and we were getting to Civil War by 7.
That's really so awesome.
So, yeah, it was cool. So I was still awake for Civil War. I will say the marathon is really fun. It was so cool to see those things on those movies on the big screen again. But you were telling me it does take a lot out of you. And yeah, you wouldn't think it takes a lot out of you, but sitting there for hours on end, it does. It does. And we were kind of feeling it, you know, that we were all excited, but the energy was kind of like wading in and out until we got to Civil War. And then all of a sudden we like got our second wind.
Oh yeah, that's when it's always good, when the final movie is like the last one, when it's a brand new one, you're always just thinking, right, I've got to get to the end. Like, that's the treat. Whereas if it's movies that are perhaps like five old ones you've already seen or five retro ones, it can be hard to keep up the energy, but it's almost like you're building towards Christmas Day. Like, you know, getting Age of Ultron before Civil War is probably like Christmas Eve, and then here you go, Christmas Day, you've got it.
So we saw Civil War, crowds into it. I was very, you know, I was happy to see the movie. And then, and here comes the judgment part, I went downstairs, not to be outdone and not to say that I don't support these Marvel movies and I'm not some sort of diehard fan. I went downstairs, walked up to the box office, bought a ticket for an IMAX show that was happening 45 minutes later. Went back upstairs, sat in my chair, and saw it a second time.
Nice.
And, you know, I Lee and I recorded our post-theater thoughts, which actually I'm going to put as a tag to this episode. So if you stick around to the end, you'll get to hear a recording of both myself coming out of the theater and Lee coming out of the theater with our initial impressions. But I saw it twice that night, and we're recording this on Saturday, May 7th. I went last night too. Standard 2D showing, but I went again. So I've seen this movie now 3 times.
That's a big thumbs up from you. I never thought anyone could love Captain America more than Peggy, but it seems like we've got you.
Yeah, I'll say. But okay, so that was our theater experience. It was going along very well. And so now we're going to get into the movie itself. So what Lee and I are going to do is we're going to give our non-spoiler impressions at first. And then we'll clearly tell you when we're going to launch into spoilers. That way, if you haven't seen the movie, you can turn the podcast off, go see the film, and join us again for the in-depth discussion. So, Lee, since you saw it first, a whole week ahead of us, what are your non-spoilery thoughts about Captain America: Civil War?
I really, really enjoy it. I think it works so well as a trilogy. I think when you watch it at the marathon, you appreciate it a lot more. Like, I think Civil War is a fantastic movie, but it's a brilliant movie when you consider it part of the whole. Like, I remember texting you coming out of Ultron and going, wow, I actually really liked Ultron this time. I've never been a fan of Ultron. I think it's fine, it's okay, there's parts I really dislike about it. But when I watch this marathon through the eyes of Captain America, that he's this thread through the two Captain America movies, the two Avengers movies, it knits together a lot better. And you're watching the movie and thinking, okay, I really don't like this Black Widow romance thing here in Ultron, but it doesn't matter because I'm focused on Captain America. And you see it from the first minute of Captain America First Avenger, how it all is building towards this that what Captain America stands for. Then when you start to meet Iron Man and the conflict they have in Avengers Assemble. Then in Winter Soldier, when he's going against governments and agencies that try to oversee what people should and shouldn't do, then you go into Ultron and you see Captain America's conflict, that he wants to end the team. Captain America wants to build the team. So it's so naturally put together. So I really enjoyed it. Like, I think it will take a bit of time for me to think of Captain America Civil War as a singular film. Just now, a lot of the things that I love it for, I really enjoy it for, I can take it as that's the movie, but I still view it as part of a bigger and more rewarding whole. So in a way, Civil War is this nearly 10, 12 hour epic to me, and it makes it all the more sweeter for that.
Now, I have a question for you, and this will speak volumes for our listeners, and I think you might agree with this. I can imagine that right now, Christopher Nolan's Batman trilogy, you've said before, is your favorite one, and I think nothing in the history of superhero cinema, past or future, will ever topple that. But would you think it would be fair to say, given, you know, because you enjoy the first Avenger?
Oh, hell yes, first Captain, one of my first. My second favorite Marvel movie.
So would it be fair for you to say that Captain America has your second favorite superhero trilogy now?
Yes, 100%. I thought you were going to maybe say, is it one of my favorite trilogies ever?
No, second favorite superhero trilogy, because it's really hard to qualify. It's really hard to qualify.
Yeah, for me, most definitely. Part of me, if the Marvel franchise ended at the end of Civil War, I think that would have definitely been one of the best trilogies ever. But the fact that it's going to continue on in some form, so the story of Captain America is always going on. So it's not a traditional trilogy,
right? But I'm just saying, if you took First Avenger, Winter Soldier, and Civil War, that's a good three.
It's a fantastic trilogy. It's and all the stuff that you get out of the Avengers movie for Steve Rogers really adds to it as well. So yeah, I would definitely say behind Christopher Nolan's trilogy, it's one of my favorite superhero trilogies. Yeah.
Because, you know, here's the thing, and it's going to lead into my thoughts on the film. There's so many times where people feel like, especially with superhero trilogies, that the cliche is you drop the ball on film three.
Yeah.
Now, I know you love Dark Knight Rises, and up to this point, that's probably been the most successful part three. But when that film came out, that most people loved it, but some people kind of were let down by it.
That's true. You can't ignore that sort of things. And that I think I can, you know, probably later on we'll touch upon how it almost links in with Batman v Superman. But you can't ignore the genre and the environment that superhero movies are in just now. So if anyone's going to be complaining, like, excuse me, Lee, Matt, please, why are you talking about Batman v Superman? It's got nothing to do with Civil War. This isn't Fox News. We don't have to be fair and balanced. It is impossible to discuss what makes Civil War a great movie and a great success without looking at what's been going on around it. So
I mean, especially, we'll get into it, but especially when Civil War hits on so many same themes as Batman v Superman, and I'll argue much better.
For sure. So if anyone's what it is, I'm going to get annoyed by us mentioning Batman v Superman in some capacity in relation to this movie, just, you know, it's going to happen. We're not being paid by Marvel. This isn't
so what fair you're and basically balanced. What you're saying is basically hashtag sorry not sorry.
Exactly. Deal with it. You can't sit with us.
But you know, so many people feel that superhero trilogies drop it on part three. Dark Knight Rises underwhelmed for some. Iron Man 3 kind of divisive, but then you think about, you know, Superman 3 and Batman Forever and X-Men The Last Stand and Spider-Man 3,
movies, Blade Trinity, Jedi, Revenge of the Sith, Hobbit, Battle of the Five Armies. That genre movies, it's not just superhero movies, really do struggle wrapping up a trilogy.
So, you know, that kind of has that cliche going against it. And we talked about this on our Winter Soldier commentary, Lee, where for whatever reason, when directors do a great initial entry and they come back for the second, they somehow can't manage to follow up. And it gets people riled up. So, you know, J.J. Abrams had that with Star Trek. You know, Joss Whedon had that with Age of Ultron. Sam Mendes had that with Spectre, where they, you know, we love their first entry. And their second entry, we think, is going to be great and comes back very divisive. So this is the Russo brothers' second foray into the Marvel Universe. So the trend, it would seem to dictate that this one falls on its face. The fact that not only does this not fall on its face, not only does this not fall victim to this to the terrible three curse, but the fact that this story is so emotional, well told, and balances, I don't know how many main characters are in this film, but there's a lot. Are there more? Yeah, there has to be more in this film than Age of Ultron.
I think it would be I don't know. I can't, you know, who's really not in it that was in Ultra? Well, I actually think
Thor,
you get less
Thor
than
and
that.
Hulk.
You don't have Thor, you don't have Hulk, you don't have Quicksilver.
It feels like there's more, though. I don't know why, but this feels grander than Ultron.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, somehow, it avoids all those traps that Ultron fell into. And I like Ultron.
Yeah,
so
I think
when I compare it to Ultron, I'm not trying to diss Ultron because I really enjoyed that film. But the balancing act in this film is so much better.
Yeah, I think you're 100% spot on as well, because when I was talking about Winter Soldier in our commentary track, I mentioned that the failures of Ultron came at a perfect time. That Marvel got a good kicking for the film being too focused on setting up other movies. It got kicked for having too many characters, too much focus here, there, and everywhere, instead of telling a really focused story. I watch this movie through the eyes of that criticism that I made myself, and I see that they have learned from that. That this movie is so tight and focused that everything is about serving the main conflict. It's not going to be a movie that is dragging you here, there, and everywhere. So even though we've got all these different characters, it still keeps it tight and focused within the conflict. What do they add to the conflict? Whose side are they on? We don't have huge side missions, storylines sprouting up here to then be dropped here and there. It's so tight. And for a movie that's got that running time and to have sat through a marathon, I never thought, man, this is nearly 2.5 hours. Time just flew by. That is so good in a superhero movie, because it's been a while since I've thought, man, this is, even some of the ones I've really enjoyed going, this is kind of getting on a bit now. Does this really need to be this kind of time? But it's serviced so well.
You know what, too, and this is not really spoiler because it's been in the trailers, but we're going to go into it more in depth. Not only did time fly by, but when it comes to things like the airport scene, I could watch an hour of just the airport scene.
Oh yeah, it's definitely one of the most one of the first comic book fight scenes where I've thought that's almost been something that's brought to life. It punches off the page like a good comic book does.
I mean, I dare say that's the best comic book fight that's ever been put on screen.
Definitely on that scale. I think the Batman Bane fight in Dark Knight Rises is better, but in terms of a superhero conflict with magical powers and all these different things, this is definitely the most enjoyable, the most fun. I was just sitting there watching it going, the smile was on my face. It was brilliant fun. Like, it got it all right, that I think the Russo brothers' strength in that scene comes from, think of the best football coaches, whether it's American football, whether it's British football. You've got to manage a team of players. So the Russo brothers have all these characters, whether it's Ant-Man, Iron Man, Spider-Man, all these different characters to play. So they can either throw it all at the screen and it all gets lost in amongst itself, or you're a good coach and you pick a moment going, right, we've got this moment come up here. You know who would be ideal? Let's get Iron Man. This is a good moment for Iron Man v Spider-Man. Let's get this. Like, they know how to manage the roster really well, so it never feels too crowded and it always feels well balanced. And that's the strength of the Russo brothers, is that they know when to play all their cards. They know when to play certain cards. It's such a great tactical job that they've done. It's like watching an army commander pick his battles. It's such a strength of confidence that they've shown.
I think it also helps that if you watch the Russo brothers interview, and I hope you have, Lee, now that you've seen the movie and you can now watch all those interviews that you didn't want to watch before, that you can tell they love these characters. Unlike certain other directors, they absolutely love what these characters stand for. And they get these characters, so that when they're fighting each other, I mean, these are like unleashing two fans with filmmaking skills.
Yeah,
having the greatest sandbox fight that you could possibly have, that airport scene.
Yeah, like, I think that's something that's always been evident in their movies so far, and even things like Arrested Development, is they love the characters and they love the genre. They're not embarrassed by it, try to change it. They go in and try and do the best job they can, whether it's with the comedy scenes in Arrested Development. Like, they love the character of Tobias, George Michael. They love all the characters. They love the genre. So they try and bring forward the genre even further. And that's why Arrested Development is one of the best comedies ever. They get to play with Captain America and the Winter Soldier, and they clearly love the character. They love the genre they're working with, so it enhances it. Now they're working with this movie, and you can tell they love playing with Captain America. They love playing with Iron Man. They love playing with Spider-Man. These people aren't ashamed of what the characters are. They love them, and that's what you want to see. That it's almost like Wes Anderson movies. Wes Anderson loves all his characters, even the characters that are even a bit crooked and bent. He loves them. He loves playing with them. He loves writing for them. And that always shows through on screen. That's why he's one of my favourite directors. And the Russo brothers have that same talent. And it's very hard to do, to love what you do.
So, you know what? I can't hold it any longer. Let's get into spoilers. But before we do, we just want to say, it sounds like from you, Lee, and definitely from me, if you haven't seen this movie and you're listening to it now, go turn us off and see it. It is worth it. It is one of the... I'll say it right now, but we'll come back to it later. It is one of the best MCU films to come out from them, and we're 13 films in now, and for them to still be this good at this point, this good, this movie, it's a total recommend.
Oh yeah, thumbs up from me, and well, I mean, I had pretty much everything up. Toes up, thumbs up, arms up, I loved it.
Okay, so we are going to launch into spoilers now, so if you haven't seen the movie, go see it and come back to us here. Okay, Lee, so we are now firmly in spoilers territory, so let's there's a lot going on in this film, so let's break things down step by step. Let's go with characters first, because I think that for me, and this could be hype, but I don't think so, having seen it three times now, I think that each one of the characters, past and present, that are introduced in this film gives their best performance. I really do. And, you know, when we talk about, I everybody knows my feelings on Chris Evans, but he's so on point in this film. I think that he improves with each and every film, and I think that by now, along with Robert Downey Jr., I think he's elevated himself to the level of Robert Downey Jr. in terms of the anchor of this franchise. I really think that he can carry it on his shoulders now. I mean, how did you feel?
Yeah, I think he's the star now. That you think back to Phase 1, even Phase 2, Iron Man was always the kind of the main character. He was the main focus of the Avengers in a way. He's the band leader. And then you start to notice the shift in Ultron where he goes, oh, like Winter Soldier first. Sounds like you're giving the orders now, Cap. And then when you've got Ultron after they've been to the bunker and they talk about, wow, like Iron Man's like, oh yeah, he gives the orders. I just build and pay for everything. So even in the movies, that the shift has happened, that they've recognized that Captain America's their star player now, and they've elevated him up to, he's the lead in this movie with all these amazing characters, personalities, big name actors. Marvel know what they're doing. They've seen that this guy is now their kind of their most valuable player.
And let's make no mistake, by the way, because you brought up a good point, and this is something that people were talking about before this film came out. Yes, there are a lot of Avengers in it, and yes, the middle portion is Avengers heavy, but this is Captain America's film, for sure. He's the driving force of all the action, and the end of the movie brings it back down to him.
For sure. I think in the middle, it becomes very Avengers-like, but that's not a bad thing, because that it's really about the team conflict at that point. But for sure, the middle, the end, is all Captain America.
And it almost kind of had to, Lee, because, you know, Avengers Assemble, or Avengers 1, as we call it here, that ended with the team splitting up and going their separate ways, right? So it was understandable in the Phase 2 movies why the other Avengers weren't present, because they're off doing their own things.
Oh, yeah.
Age of Ultron ends, Captain America is leading the new Avengers. So if they weren't in this film, it would be weird. So the fact that it is kind of an Avengers film, I think, is a byproduct of the end of Age of Ultron.
Yeah, and answers that thing as well, that it's always been the joke that's been made of the Marvel movies, is why don't they call up Thor, Captain America, Iron Man whenever they've got any problems? And so in a way, it kind of puts to bed that kind of joke cliche of like, what, why haven't they called up the other guys to get along when there's a problem? So it's aware of some of the jokes that have been made by themselves and by others about the franchise. So they go, oh yeah, well, we're going to call them up now. So they're speed dialing all the other Avengers to get involved this time.
And, you know, along with Captain America comes, I think everyone's a step up in this, because along with Captain America comes his buddy Falcon. And Falcon kind of is like his grounding in this movie, his moral compass, because, you know, Captain America, when we get into story, you know, he's always been putting others before himself. Yeah. And the beautiful thing about this film is that for the first time in his life, I think, his actions can be viewed as a little selfish. It's Falcon that's the one that, you know, brings up to him, are you sure we're doing the right thing? Should we do this? You know, that doesn't sound right. He serves that purpose, and he does it with honor, and he's really funny in this movie and in a very natural way.
I think so too. And I think you need someone like that. The fact that Falcon's a fellow military man, they're both born of the same thing, and they can ask that sort of questions, that it's not just a civilian tackling Captain America. It's someone that's essentially a Captain America in his own right as well, going, are we sure we're doing the right thing here? That he's got that conflict as well. And the fact that they both come in line with each other shows that they've both got that same philosophy that we expect from, well, they deserve criticism at times, our leaders, that that the military forces are doing it for the right reasons, not because someone's told them to do it, but they're doing it for the right reasons.
Right. And on the flip side of that, we have Iron Man and his buddy Rhodey. And you know what, Lee, I have to say, Downey, some people feel, and I could see where they're coming from a little bit, that by the end of Avengers 1 and then Iron Man 3 and Age of Ultron, he was kind of becoming a little bit unlikable in the sense that he was kind of becoming just this quip machine that you pull the lever and he just is sarcastic. For me personally, and again, I don't feel that this is hyperbole, I think this is the best that Robert Downey Jr. has been as Tony Stark since Iron Man 1.
Oh, yeah. And you know what the always thing is? How do you... We've talked about Star Trek before. And Star Trek was at its best when the characters had conflict and were in conflict with each other and could debate and discuss philosophies. When they all got along as one big happy family, the conflict and drama was lacking. You could have exciting adventures and stories, but if you've got no conflict or drama generated by the characters, then ultimately you're not really advancing as a character. With this movie, they've allowed that to happen, that they have a conflict between this at times harmonious group, at times conflicted group. And I think that by making Iron Man and Captain America, and it grows through the film, a tough personal battle, then it gives the actors something exciting to work with. They're not just fighting off CGI monsters or having quips. They're really getting down to a personal conflict, and that's an exciting thing to watch.
This isn't a fight with an outside force. This is family versus family.
Yeah. And
I think and you know, quite honestly, when it's family versus family, things get uglier, I think.
I mean, Matt, I don't want to jump the gun here, but can I talk about, in relation to Captain America and Iron Man, the final revelation between the two, or do you want to leave that till a bit later?
We should probably leave that for a bit later, because I do want to get to that, though, because that's probably one of the best parts of the film.
I won't reveal here, but I would say that revelation later in the movie, it is so powerful, and you can buy into this conflict so much that you come out afterwards and you can debate still who was right, Cap, Iron Man. What would I have done? Would you have done the right thing? And that conflict is so exciting. It's better to come out of a movie debating what was the right thing, debating who was in the right, who was in the wrong, than to come out and go, yeah, that was a brilliant action scene and all that sort of stuff. Real conflict like that creates such a talking point. And in a way, it changes these characters forever. If I'm struggling to know how I would have dealt with it, then how can we expect the characters not to have that same problem?
But, you know, bringing it back to the characters themselves, would you agree that this is probably... They grounded Tony Stark again, and it works, like, so well. And I really do think that this is the best Robert Downey Jr. has ever been in the role, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, he plays the playboy philanthropist so well in the first Iron Man and Avengers. But this time, it's personal. And that he if I was an actor, that's what I would love. It's not... Yeah, I'm sure running around in a superhero suit is so much fun. But when you get really juicy dialogue, conflict, character clashes, that's probably what you want to do as an actor. I'm sure, and getting handsomely paid to do so is probably a big bonus as well. But you can tell how much he loves it.
And, you know, they use his relationship with Rhodey to make it personal, too.
Yeah.
And what I like about Don Cheadle in this movie is that he gets to, first of all, I think he gets to do a little bit more than when he gets given in the past films. Not that he plays like a major role here, but I think this is, again, consistently the best he's been written, the best he's been acted. And, you know, when there's a scene toward the end where Rhodey is recovering from the battle and Downey is helping him, that's the best that I've liked. That's the most that I've ever liked Rhodey. I really, it really made him human.
I think as well that it also makes an interesting parallel. We were talking about how Falcon and Cap are military men. So is Rhodey. And Rhodey does not agree with them whatsoever. And the scene where you see him crippled and he's struggling to walk is all too relatable. We've all seen the footage on MSNBC, Sky News, of soldiers after the conflict that people have got involved and people are hurt and injured, and people like Rhodey being crippled the way he is, you know, being paralyzed, makes it all too relatable and believable. And it answers a conflict that Marvel has been leveled against it many a time, that it's all safe. If a character dies, he lives the next week. But the fact with this movie is that someone is severely crippled in a way that we've all related to, we've all seen on the news, makes the conflict really brutal.
Here's a spoiler, because we're now in spoiler territory. Yeah. nobody dies in this film. And people will, again, will say, oh, well, that's just Marvel playing it safe because they have franchises to set up. But let's break that down for a second before we go on to the other characters. If somebody died in this film, if one of the main characters, if Iron Man or Cap died, then, you know, I have no doubt that it would have been well written because everything in the movie had been well written up to that point.
Yeah.
But what would that have accomplished? Because Downey and Evans have both said, we're going to be in Infinity War.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, you have another Superman death. What would that have done necessarily? What I think happens at the end of this film is far worse in the sense that this film does not end happily. No. This film ends with, I don't know how we're going to bring this team back together. There's going to have to be some serious soul searching.
Yeah.
But I'm fine with them not dying, especially when something like that with Rhodey happens. You know, and it's so dramatic too, because they let you linger on it. First of all, he's shot down by friendly fire.
Yeah. Once again, all too relatable on the news, whether it's in Iraq, Afghanistan, we've seen it all too much and too frequently.
And the Russos want you to feel that movement because they don't cut away. You get to see him fall maybe 1,000 feet out of the air.
Yeah.
And one of the reactions from my audience was everyone kind of gasped when you see him hit the ground.
Yeah.
I mean, because like, he thuds. Like, he creates like a crater.
Oh, yeah. And it was one of those things that it's just such a brutal death. Not a brutal death. A brutal injury to happen. And it's not just that he's taken out by some sort of superhero like power or something like that. He's taken out by friendly fire by someone that things just go a bit too far. How many times have we been, whether it's ourselves or we've watched it up when we're out on a drink sometimes, that sometimes things just go a little too far and then someone always gets hurt, someone always gets injured. And it's just a relatable injury to happen, whether it's on the news or whether it's something that we see on ourselves on a lower term basis. And that's what I really liked about it. It's bold and it's not hiding behind the safety of, you know, someone does something wacky and that's how he gets injured. It's a relatable injury to have, and it's one of the worst ones that could ever happen, to be an accident.
Yeah, and that friendly fire comes from the Vision, who in this movie, you know, he's not on screen for a whole lot, but what they give him, especially in his relationship to Scarlet Witch, I think makes them, again, they're trying to humanize these characters, which is good, because when we met them in Ultron, we didn't get a lot of time to humanize them. They kind of humanized Scarlet Witch a little bit through her relationship with her brother and what happened to her. But now that she's on her own and really has no one to talk to, and, you know, when we catch up with the Avengers at the beginning, they're on the mission to stop Crossbones.
Yeah.
And she causes a major accident, Scarlet Witch, in trying to save the day. So people are afraid of her in this movie.
Yeah. And that's the thing as well, that this, and that happens then as well, that ties into the incident with his name's escaped me just now. Not cross off. Ignore me. Just delete that out. my mind's gone blank. Who I was? Iron Man's buddy that we were just talking about. Yeah, with Rhodey. That the accident that happened with Scarlet Witch. That people get injured by accidents just happening. So that both sides of the conflict have witnessed firsthand that it is a problem. It's about how you deal with the problem. That we've got Brody being taken out by friendly fire, then we've got someone being taken out by a suicide bombing that mistakenly happens. It's so tough to watch.
Yeah, and but so, you know, their relationship, Vision and Scarlet Witch, develops from the fact that, you know, people are afraid of Scarlet Witch and they're trying to keep her holed up in the Avengers facility. And really, Vision, they have that nice scene together. Vision's the only one who's not scared of her.
Yeah.
And what she can do. And like I said, just little things like that make the characters so much more relatable than the, you know, the ass-kicking that they were doing in Ultron. Yeah. I liked Scarlet Witch before. I love her now, and I love the Vision.
Yeah, like I once said it to a friend and I got made fun of it for a bit. See, in movies, you know what conflict I really like? Man on man. Because men, and I'm not just meaning men as in, you know, me and you, Matt, but all mankind, whether it's women, men, all these different, everything in between. When we are in conflict with each other, it's all the more interesting and exciting. That seeing characters in conflict with each other is more interesting and relatable and exciting to watch than people fighting CGI characters. And I think, like, when you can see the effects of that. You can see people fight. But then when you see little moments like you're talking about with Vision and Scarlet Witch, when they're talking about fears and worries and how it's going to affect them, these accords, that's interesting and exciting to watch. That you can only watch so many times, people hitting and punching each other. But that's where the conflict comes from. That it's not necessarily the punches, it's what happens afterwards. The bruise you take, the punch you take, the hit you take, that's interesting and exciting. And I love those little scenes with Scarlet Witch and Vision. That Vision, I think, almost steals the show at times. He reminds me of Niles Crane as he's kicking around in his jumper, cooking little fancy foreign meals. It's so funny. But it creates a philosophical discussion that's interesting to watch and an effect of everything else that's going on.
Yeah, totally. And who else do we got? I'm happy to say for anyone who was put off by the story last year in Age of Ultron, Black Widow is very much comfortably back to her Winter Soldier self.
Oh, yeah.
Both in fighting style and in her main storyline, which... You know, one of the questions that I had going in is, you know, why would Black Widow, who, you know, makes a pretty bold statement at the end of Winter Soldier, why would she be on Tony's side in the pro-government side? And the way it plays out in the movie, first of all, they address that, because I love when they're talking about the Accords, Falcon says to her, aren't you the same woman who told the government to go kiss our ass 2 years ago? But she makes sense in the sense that she's not necessarily pro-government. She's trying to bring the public back to their side.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says something to the effect of, we need to rebuild trust with the people.
Exactly.
But just because she's on Tony's side in the end doesn't mean that she ignores the relationship that she developed with Captain America in the last movie. As a matter of fact, I think they go deeper, and she's almost like, you know, his surrogate sister. I mean, she shows up for him when he's suffering, when, you know, Peggy Carter finally passes away in this film.
Yeah.
She's there for him. She's always trying to warn him off of taking certain paths. And even at the end, when the airport scene is over and Bucky and Captain America are trying to escape to go on their mission, she could stop them. She chooses not to.
And I think that's believable as well, that people aren't just sometimes one side or another in conflicts. That we look at politics, especially in America just now, where it's so polarized. Yeah, we look at all the people that are going to Trump rallies or Sanders rallies, but people are more likely to be in between. That we all know people that are one side or the other, and people are always in between saying, okay, I'm kind of in the middle ground here, I see your point, Tony. I'm kind of with you on this and all that sort of stuff. But hey, this other person at this side, I'm with you, Cap, as well. But I really need you to kind of maybe think twice. That's what real life is like. People aren't just like, I'm Team Cap, I'm Team Iron Man, and there's no compromise in between. That for most people that are caught up in the crossfire of polarizing figures, is where most people land.
Yeah, I agree. And she plays it well, and you believe every turn that she makes.
Yeah.
And like I said, grounded is the word here. Everybody is so grounded. So that covers a lot of our returning Avengers, unless I missed something.
I think we got them all, yeah?
You know, Bucky is kind of an Avenger in this film. So, you know, in terms of him, they do a very nice job of writing a fine line with, you know, he's more normal, quote-unquote, than he was in Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
But I liked how they kind of turned him into a... And it I think it's consistent. Yeah. They turned him into kind of a Manchurian candidate sort of thing, where, like, if you say a certain combination of words, that triggers the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
I thought
it was very interesting.
And I thought that's great, because it still instills a sense of danger about him. Like, he could be Bucky Barnes. If you say the right combination of words, he's the Winter Soldier.
For sure. Like, and I think that when you're watching Bucky Barnes through most of this movie, he's not Bucky Barnes. He's not the Winter Soldier. He's someone that's lost both of who he really is, that from the knockout effects of everything that's kind of come before, he doesn't really know who he is. He's still trying to figure out, who am I? Where do I kind of fall? That Captain America is really his only consistent drawback to the past, that he's a man of no home. He's got a brother, but really it's going to take a long time for him to discover who he really is again.
Yeah, and the fact that he can still be controlled, I mean, they like, you already kind of feel bad for him, because what happened, it wasn't his fault in Winter Soldier, but they really just drive that point home in this film. And he is more, I will say, if you're asking me, is he more Bucky or Winter Soldier in this film? He is more, he's coming back to the Bucky side, because he's verbal, and he's starting to remember more, but he still has the Winter Soldier in him, which makes him still a threat.
He's never so far away that you couldn't think, given the right situation, that he could turn around and put a bullet in your head.
Right. And he tries that in one of the best action scenes in the film.
Oh, yeah.
So that covers our returning characters. Now let's talk about what everyone is buzzing about with this film, the new characters, starting with Black Panther, who,
forgot, Matt. We forgot who? Ant-Man. We forgot. How can we forget the littlest
guy
in
true.
The room?
That's true. But he's only in the airport scene, really, but the time he spends on screen, Paul Rudd knows how to steal scenes.
I cannot wait to see the next Ant-Man and Wasp movie. How he is just, he's so funny, and brings that levity to the movie. Is getting quite tense at that point.
And
he brings a great bit of levity to that movie and some really cracking moments.
Yeah, for sure. And then during the airport scene, I mean, my crowd had a strong reaction to it. I know your British crowds tend to be more sedate, but did people like the giant man moment?
Yeah, that got a big laugh, that people were really laughing and smiling along with what was going on in that conflict scene, that everyone... I see when he exploded into big, like, this big Ant-Man, I was like, what? This is hysterical. And that's so much fun as well, that the battle in the airport flicks between styles so well, because there's so many different characters with different traits. So when Ant-Man becomes this big ant, it's like, yeah, I'm on board with that.
And
it looks
okay. I thought it was going to look kind of like Godzilla attacking the city, but
it looks
fine. It actually works.
Yeah, I didn't know that scene was coming, because obviously I buried myself in a badger hole waiting for this movie. So I did not know that was coming. So it was a real, real big moment for me. It was a good laugh.
So Ant-Man, for the little time he's in this movie, makes a big impression.
The little time? Oh, right. I saw what you did there.
But I think more people are going to be excited for Ant-Man and the Wasp
after
this. If they weren't already sold on the character. Okay, now we can get to Black Panther, who, you know, with all the calls for diversity in these modern blockbuster films, I can't really see anyone coming away saying that they were disappointed with how Black Panther was, because I thought he was badass.
Yeah. I don't think I love Black Panther as much as most people did. I think he's really cool, good foundation. I think he's badass. But I felt a lot of his action scenes were a bit repetitive. I think I came out of this thinking, I'm really curious to see more of this character.
I do think he's in good hands with that actor, though. Chadwick Boseman did a great job.
I mean, he was brilliant on Get On Up. I thought he was excellent at that. But I still feel that I was... And I think it's quite right as well, because ultimately it's still meant to be a tease, this character, that we're only meant to see... Just still get a little bit. Like, he's not meant to overwhelm the main cast. So I'm excited for the Black Panther movie. But in this movie, I came away thinking, yeah, he's badass, but yeah, I can deal with him later. And it never left the biggest of impressions on me, but there was just so many other great characters and moments going on in the movie that he was just a bit more to the side for me. I maybe on repeat viewings I'll appreciate him a bit more, but for just now it's like, yeah, that's fine.
I do think though, for like, this is the first major successful, I think, black superhero portrayal on screen, aside from, you know, War Machine and Falcon.
Yeah.
But you know, this is one who's going to get his own movie.
Yeah.
And I think the movie's in good hands. I think Chadwick Boseman did a great job. I liked his story of I like the fact that he's in it, but he's not, it's not much to do with the Accords. It's a personal thing for him to avenge his father's death.
Yeah. And I think the plot growth with him as well, that obviously he's in conflict with Bucky Barnes, who he thinks has killed his dad. And the fact that by the end he can forgive, that there is, in amongst all this despair and issues, that there is some forgiveness, there is some that people can put aside their conflicts and grow from it. So I think he does have a really good arc, but it's just, he didn't leave the biggest of impressions on me, but that's not a problem because he didn't have the biggest of opportunities to leave that impression.
Right, but I'll tell you where he did leave a good impression on me, and my second point about him is that for all the people who say, oh, Marvel movies are just so kid-like with their humor,
yeah,
Black Panther's a very serious character.
Oh,
yeah. He's a no-BS kind of guy because my favorite little moment during that airport scene with him is when he's going up against Hawkeye.
Uh-huh.
And he has that moment where Hawkeye says, I don't think we've met before, I'm Clint, and all he says is, I don't care.
Yeah, like, and he's definitely not a Joss Whedon character. He is just ruthless, and I think it'll be interesting to see the shades that they add to the character, because,
and I think it's in good hands because, you know, Ryan Coogler is writing and directing that film.
Yeah, that's the guy who did Creed, wasn't it?
Creed, yes.
So I look forward to seeing Black Panther fighting on the Everton football pitch some bad guy on a boxing ring. So I can't wait for the movie, but as I say, just now it's not the biggest of impression that's left on me, but I've seen enough to know I'm really looking forward to seeing what they do with him.
You know, a character who made a big impression on me, and I'm surprised at how much I loved him, and I hope that this made a bigger impression on you, mm-hmm, Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man is so, so good.
I never thought because I liked Spider-Man before, and
yeah,
I was okay with his films, but I have never liked Spider-Man more than the 30 minutes he's in this film.
Yeah, he is so funny. Like, I saw, obviously, the only thing I saw of him was obviously the little clip in the trailer. I never saw any of the clips from the movie or anything like that. And that scene with him and Tony Stark is fantastic. That is, I was watching, and that was so hard not to tell anyone in America, like, about, oh my God, I really want to talk about Spider-Man. Please someone talk about Spider-Man with me. It was so funny. Like, the dialogue is so sharp and witty, and it helps having an actor playing Spider-Man that has actually got that young spunk and isn't just some actor pushing 30.
I know Tom Holland is 19, but he look, you know, the character's supposed to be 16 and he looks 16.
Oh, exactly. And, you know, someone was saying to me the other day, actually, Aunt May doesn't look very old. And I was like, she's 51. Like,
yeah, like, it's Marissa Tomei, who,
yeah,
you know, by all accounts looks fantastic, but she is in her 50s.
Exactly.
It's not unbelievable that she could be the aunt of a high school kid.
Yeah, when I was in high school, I had aunts that were about early 50, late 40s. It's perfectly normal, just because she's not an old biddy with making cakes and putting an apple pie on the shelf and all that sort of stuff. It doesn't mean she's an old person. She's still relatively old, but she doesn't need to have the grey hair to be Aunt May. Like, I don't see the issue.
No, I don't either, and I love Marissa Tomei, so I'm looking forward to seeing her portrayal.
I can't wait. Like, watching that Spider-Man scene in the house between him and Tony Stark, where, like, the dialogue is just, it's just so snappy, and it's
and
so funny.
They announced before this film came out that Robert Downey Jr. is going to be in Spider-Man Homecoming next year. You watch that scene and you go, there's why he's in Spider-Man.
Oh, exactly. Because I saw a few people go, really? Why is he going to be in this movie too? And then you watch it going, oh, hell yeah. Well, like, look at that. Why would you not want these two together? They just bring each other to life. It's such a good comedy partnership.
And can I say thank you for addressing a complaint that so many people had about the previous Spider-Man movies? When Tony Stark meets him and knows that he's Spider-Man, he's using a costume that a high school kid could make. It's a piece of crap. But it makes sense that you look at his initial costume and you're like, yeah, actually, a 16-year-old could make this, as opposed to the other films.
And it's like that shows the Russo brothers' strength that they've earned from comedy, that they've got these brilliant, the brilliant dialogue. It's brilliantly paced, brilliantly acted. It's such a great scene that you can tell that these comedy directed legends, in my eyes, you know, Arrested Development, they're going to have the key to the city for life, for all I care. That there's, it's so good. It's not just people being like doing Joss Whedon dialogue. It's people just being genuinely very, very funny. Great direction, great writing. It's Spider-Man and Iron Man. It's not Joss Whedon and Joss Whedon.
Right. And then when he's in the battle, I mean, he has all the great lines. And then, you know, when that airport scene is done and he says, he goes out of the movie, I kind of was like, for the first time in years, I was like, oh, we can't get more Spider-Man in this movie.
I read a thing the other week that Spider-Man has 47 lines in his very brief appearance in this movie. Superman has 42 lines in a movie that he is the co-star of. And I'm just going to leave that little information there. Yeah. That says a lot in my eyes.
You know, the world probably thought that they couldn't get excited for a third incarnation of Spider-Man.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and some people may feel differently, but I dare people to say that they're not at least mildly curious about Spider-Man after this movie, because I really do think they're in good hands.
Oh, because
I love Tom Holland already, and he's barely in this film.
Yeah, like, it's such a great mini-pilot. You can imagine, I was really excited about Marvel getting Spider-Man in a way, because I knew that they would do something fresh and exciting with it. They weren't going to do the problem that the Mark Webb things flew into again. So, yep, I think we're definitely in for a treat when Spider-Man Homecoming comes out. And, it's like
next year.
He steals the show. He really steals the show. I think a lot of people are going to come out of this really excited for the next Spider-Man movie. And, you know, They've got my money already.
And but everybody in my theater loved his Empire Strikes Back joke.
Oh, yeah. It's so good, isn't it? Because that makes him relatable. He's one of us. How many times do we reference, like, Star Wars or whatever in the way we like to explain a problem? It's like, Matt, we've got a problem here. It's like when Captain Kirk's on the ship, or, oh, it's like when Luke's going to the, you know, that's how we just talk.
I just love how he refers to it as an old movie, and then Rhodey is like, Jesus, Tony, how old is this guy?
I know. Exactly. It's so cool.
But he was fantastic. I'm so excited for Spider-Man. And this kind of brings us to a close with the characters, and it kind of segues into story. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it is brother against brother in this film.
Yeah.
There is a villain in the form of Daniel Brühl and Zemo. And, you know, some of the criticism I read online is that he's another weak Marvel villain. But I don't think so. Only because, to me, his plan wasn't world domination. It wasn't this. Yeah. It wasn't that. And they're not fighting because of him. He just kind of helps it along. They were always going to... My feeling is, and I don't know if you agree, they were always going to come into conflict.
Yeah.
But he pushes them in a direction where they tear each other apart.
Yeah.
And the reason that he tears each other up, that he wants to do it, I thought was relatable. I mean, like, I don't agree with some of the actions that he took to get there.
Yeah.
I understand why he's doing it.
For me, I completely agree with you here. That Dan, I thought about this when I was watching the movie, and it touches into something I said earlier on. The movie is streamlined and tight. Everything is about serving the conflict of this movie between the two characters. It's not that you've got this conflict and you've got someone else, Daniel Brühl's character, off doing his own little thing. I really like the route they took here with the bad guy. Firstly, Daniel Brühl ranks number 4 on my man crush list. So to see him in IMAX, what a buzz. I think what I liked about it, is he memorable? Not really, no. Does he do much in the movie that people think are memorable? No. All he does is, he's just someone there that is a facilitator and enabler that, as you say, doesn't need to do much. And he is just there. He goes out, he doesn't have to do much to get the conflict to happen. The conflict has been bubbling in this movie series for ages. And it shows, And this is where the bit where I'm going to talk about Batman v Superman. People talked about Batman v Superman, that the idea that we had Jesse Eisenberg's Lex Luthor, they had to do this convoluted, whatever nonsense he was doing, to generate a conflict between these two characters. That he had to do all this bizarre plan that, you know, pages upon pages upon pages, which even the best James Bond villains would have thought, come on, tone it back. And I watched this, and it showed Batman v Superman that you don't need to have something convoluted to create conflict. You just need good writing. The conflict between Iron Man and Captain America is so believable. So Daniel Bruhl just needs to pepper the steak a little bit to have it ready. He comes in. What more would you want him to do? Like, people that are saying, oh, no, he's an unmemorable. What do you want him to do? What more does he need to do? Nothing. What he does services the story. We get a bit of character. And he the conflict he helps generate is success. Someone asks him at the end, did you succeed? And he's like, he goes, you failed. And he goes, no, I've succeeded. So he's achieved his mission. Some people's mission is just to watch people fight. How many times do we tune into TV programs and people are just winding someone up to create conflict or generate an issue? So he does his job really well, and I like it. I really would disagree that there's anything really wrong with the character in this movie, because what people are wanting from him isn't what the character was designed to do, wasn't written to do, so he's not a failure. He's a success, just like his plan.
Right. And yeah, I got him. And at the end of the day, what makes him impressive is the way that this film ends. And he kind of says it. He kind of wins. I mean, yeah. Like the Avengers are torn apart at the end of this film. And, you know, Cap has his faction that I guess he breaks out of the prison.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't, it's going to take something, you know, something catastrophic like a certain Thanos to maybe bring them back together. And who knows what kind of terms they'll even be on then.
Yeah. You've got this whole mystery through the movie of like, what is Daniel Bruhl trying to do? What happened with this, that we follow this thread that anyone that's listening to this, we don't need to explain it all out for them. But what is Daniel Bruhl's character looking to investigate? What information is he trying to get out of the Winter Soldier? What is he hoping to get from this book? And then the fact that we find out that Iron Man's parents were assassinated by the Winter Soldier is pretty shocking.
Yeah, I think I kind of got an inkling of that from the last film, but
the thing that none of us expected was Cap knew. And everyone that was pro-Captain America. So that this movie shows that it's not just black and white, that it's greys, that Captain America, like, and it's when, this for me sums up why the marathon worked so successfully. What is it Peggy says to Captain America in the first movie? I forget which one, but I'm sure it was Peggy. You're a terrible liar. Iron Man asks later in the movie, Cap, did you know he killed my parents? No. Did you know he killed my parents? Yes.
And I love the way he says it, because it, you know, I'll cuss this once on this show, but it's fine. But the way Robert Downey Jr. just looks at him as he says, don't bullshit me, Rogers, did you know? And just that look on his face is like, I've never been more intimidated by Iron Man than I was in that scene.
And like, that is a horrific thing that Cap did. That we mentioned when we did the Winter Soldier commentary, everyone was Team Cap going into this movie. Maybe that changes a few people's minds.
Even that one, I could not be more Team Cap than I possibly was.
Yeah.
But even in that moment, I just knew that when he said that, things got really bad.
Yeah. And when we discover that Iron Man is off to follow Cap and Bucky to Russia to find the killer soldiers, I was watching that going, oh, guys, you've almost wrapped up the conflict so quickly, and now everyone's happy families again. And I was a bit annoyed with the film at that point. I thought, oh, come on, can you not keep the conflict going? It felt unnatural to wrap it up that way. But then when you get there, And it ties in, we spoke about the superhero battle at the airport. That's this great comic book moment. It's this great atmosphere. It's like, wow, it's like a comic book brought to life. See when this revelation comes out that Captain America knew that his best friend had killed one of his compatriots' parents, that the fighting between the two of them ends up being punches, that they're just pummeling each other. They're not just using powers. When people are annoyed, when human beings are annoyed, it grounds these two characters down to the human level. And how would me and you fight if we fell out? If I went, by the way, Matt, I know who, my pal killed your friend and I never told you. Me and you would be just punching each other. We wouldn't be using superpowers. That's how we would show our aggression. It goes back to the most primal thing.
I mean, at that point, the reason that third act fight works so well, at least from Iron Man's perspective, is there's no more tippy toeing. There's no more talk about politics. It's just pure rage at that point.
Yeah, and that's how you'd rage in that kind of fight. You would be fighting each other. You'd just be punching each other. Like, you know, think of it like when you're punching a pillow. If you're so frustrated, it's like it's so believable. It's so raw. It's outstanding. It was an outstanding decision that it brings it that we're building up going, what's Daniel Bruhl wanting with all these you know, assassins? He just kills them. And he just brings all, it's just all about, the film, instead of getting bigger and bigger, it gets smaller and smaller. And that's amazing. It's learned from the mistakes of Ultron. It makes it smaller and smaller. It brings all the characters, all the players into this one room. And all he has to say is, by the way, ask him about 1991. Like you would, you know, when we've seen it, when we've been out before, someone's just trying to wind up. So I go, go ask Matt about what he said the other week. And it's like, it generates the conflict. And to make it so small and so intimate, and then to make the violence so intimate as well, is just, they get it. It's so smart. It's on the ball.
You know, I some people might be annoyed that the whole Winter Soldier thing is a red herring, but I liked it, that the fact that this is not going to be about some guy who needs assassins to take over the world.
Yeah.
When they first show up there and they find all of them dead, I love that moment where
I didn't expect that. Where
Daniel Bruhl goes, "You really think I wanted more of you in the world?"
Yeah.
It was perfect. It was absolutely perfect, and that fight is. It's exciting and yet hard to see, because you feel for both characters and you don't want either of them to die or be taken out or anything like that. But at the same time, you get why they're fighting. And just some great stuff there. Evans and Downey have never been better than they are in that scene. Their whole performance.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, even when Downey says lines that are normally funny in other movies, here when he says them, they're not funny, and they're not meant to be.
They're so snarky, aren't they?
They're usually so snarky, but like, just little things like toward the end of the fight, where he's asking the computer to analyze Captain America's fighting patterns to beat him. You remember that?
Yeah.
And then the computer kicks in, and Downey just has this quick line, "Let's kick his ass."
Uh-huh.
Normally, that would be like kind of a yay, funny moment. Yeah. But when he says, "Let's kick his ass," it's deadly serious.
Oh, yeah. And we see it throughout the film that Iron Man has been worn down. He has been battered from all sides. He's lost the love of his life, Pepper Potts. She's gone. He meets that character earlier in the movie whose son died in Sokovia.
Shout out to Alfred Woodard for the win. Loved her.
Exactly. So she comes and speaks to him and tells him, "This is on you. How dare you?" And that is like, imagine someone came up to you and went, "You're responsible for my son's death." So once again, all this conflict is so believable that we can see all the sides so well. Like, I can 100% see why Iron Man makes the decisions he does. And he's almost entirely justifiable in doing what he's doing. That's genuine conflict. It's not just building it up so two people kill each other. Sorry, Zach. But this is what conflict's about. Taking our characters out of their comfort zone, being challenged by people out with their reality, that someone's telling you, "You killed my son, it's on you." Like, that's amazing.
That's, I think, brilliant. It's ironic too that, you know, again, there's a mother thing in this film like there is in Batman v Superman. Yeah. But when this mother revelation happens, it doesn't wrap up the conflict. It, in fact, makes it worse, and it gives even more personal motivation. Because I think that at that point, before he discovers it, and what makes Zemo a more interesting villain is that I think it would have taken some time, but Iron Man and Cap maybe would have come to amends, because Iron Man was really realizing that he was wrong about Zemo.
Yeah.
But then when that revelation happens, this is why at the end of the film, when they kind of go off on their separate ways and Cap breaks the rest of his team out of prison, they're not going to make amends anytime soon.
No. And how do you forgive something like that? How do you? Like, I don't think that's ever going to be forgiven. That, yeah, things like the conflict, misunderstandings. Yeah, it's all water under the bridge. But how do you forgive someone that covered something up like that from you? That fought alongside you while knowing something so important, but never felt important to tell you? Like, that's how you create conflict. And it's so fascinating that we're going to be debating this for years. Like, yeah, beforehand, we're all Team Cap, Team Iron Man. Where do you stand now? Like,
I walk out, you know, that's the great thing. And the Russo brothers said that they wanted this. And if they wanted this, then they genuinely succeeded. And we can start wrapping up here.
Yeah.
But when I came out of this film, I was Team Cap going in. Yeah. I walk out of this film, I'm like, I don't know. I really don't know. Because I get where Captain America is coming from, and I like him. He's my favorite Avenger. I think he stands for what's right. But at the same time, I get where Tony was coming from with the Accords, number one. But then when they bring the personal stuff into it, it's like, I don't know if I could move past it at that point. I get why Tony is that upset.
Yeah, and I think that that's what makes it such a success, that we've watched a movie which could easily have been about two people fighting.
And not only that, it could have very easily, because this is Captain America's movie, they could have very easily villainized Tony Stark, like they did in the comic, quite frankly. Because if you read the Civil War comic, and Tony is much more of a villain in that film than he is in this book, in this movie.
It makes for such interesting viewing and such interesting debate that I'd love to be able to, I think we could do an entire podcast in a year's time and go, right, what's our reflections all this year's on? You know, are you still Team Cap after this? Could you forgive Team Captain America? Like, I come out of it that I said going in, I'm Team Cap because he's my guy. But I can see where Iron Man's coming from. Afterwards, Captain America's still my guy. I think he does a hell of a lot of things right, but so does Iron Man. And I can totally understand why Iron Man might never forgive Captain America, because frankly, even if he's my guy, my person under fire as well, I'd hate him.
How do you forget something like that?
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can't. It's just... And even if you do, even if you somehow can come back to some semblance of civility, how do you put your trust in someone like that again? Yeah.
You look at the Captain Iron Man's got that big bruise punch around his eye. And we look at that and go, that'll heal. But how does a scar, knowing what someone else had hid from you, what someone else did behind your back, how can you forgive that? That's not going to go away. That scar is there forever.
And, you know, where there's no forgiveness, there's no trust. And when there's no trust, there's no team.
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm really concerned for the Avengers going forward, and why I'm really looking forward now to how the Russo brothers, and thank God, I really think after this film and The Winter Soldier, Marvel made the right choice. These are the men for the Infinity War films.
Oh, yeah.
I really do think so. I'm really excited to see how they pick up the pieces and try to bring these people back together to face this huge threat that's coming.
Oh, yeah. And whether they can put all their issues aside to do it. I think if the movie had made the decision when Iron Man goes to help Cap and Bucky and left it at that, you would have thought this is fallen into the normal superhero trapping. But the fact that they've gone and created this conflict that can't be easily washed away, they've put a lot of pressure on themselves, and it's a good pressure to have of what's the next step for these characters? Where do they go now? how do they come back together? And I really hope and I trust that the Russo brothers, when coming back to bring these people together to put the team back into action, aren't going to wash it under the couch or the rug. They're going to really have to work hard to make us bring them together and make us forgive Captain America and Iron Man as well.
Yeah, I really think that, and I think they're going to do it, because I think this film, and this is the last thing I'll say about the story, is I think Marvel has reached a point, and I think rightly so, that they are now 13 films in. They're not really holding the hand of the audience anymore.
Yeah.
Like, when you watched Age of Ultron last year, I liked the film, but they really kind of did away with all the stuff that happened in Phase 2 just to tell the Age of Ultron story.
Absolutely.
I don't think that's going to happen anymore, and they've said as much, at least for Infinity War, that, you know, it is what it is. We have our audience now. We can just go forward, and I think, damn right, it's about time. Just continue forward and don't drop the story, because it was great.
Exactly. You can. I trust the Russo brothers even more than when I went into that movie, and they've not lost any of my trust. And we've talked about that. We talked about that earlier. How many directors come back for a second time and have been burned, and the fans have been burned? Not this time.
No, and I think it's because there are two of them. I think it's because there are two other writers.
Yeah.
And Kevin, you know, those four people plus Kevin Feige.
Yeah.
I think if they work together. Let them do what they need to do. I truly trust them, and I hope that people will come back, and, you know, maybe if people who were turned off by Age of Ultron last year, give this movie a chance, because do think that it will renew your faith in to at least see this universe through Infinity War.
Yeah, and you know what as well? What did I say earlier on? I even enjoyed Age of Ultron more by having watched this movie as well.
So I was going to say, this movie kind of like... This movie cannot happen without Age of Ultron. So I kind of I think it makes Age of Ultron better in retrospect. Not that it's a great movie. Not that people can't have their problems with that movie, but this movie makes that movie important.
Yeah, there's more to enjoy out of it now when you view it as part of this whole story, when you view it as the Captain America story.
So let's wrap it up, Lee. This is really hard for me because I've just seen it a few times, but it's so new, but where does this rank in my Marvel verse?
I know.
It's either going to be... It's up there. It's way up there.
For sure, yeah.
Just because I love Captain America so much.
Yeah.
The Winter Soldier had a tighter story and told it a little bit more quickly, so I guess I can give the edge to that barely.
Yeah.
The worst that this is going to come in on Civil War is number 2.
Okay.
It's either going to be number 2 or number 1, and maybe that will change with the years to come when the story all plays out. At the moment, I'm going to say it's my second favorite in terms of story.
Yeah.
It's my favorite in terms of acting, though.
Yeah.
If we're doing by performance, Civil War is number 1.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and I think that this definitely unseats Avengers Assemble for me as my number 2.
Interesting. Well, I'm going to see it again tomorrow. I've been so busy this week, I've not had the chance to go see it again, so I've got the full intentions of seeing it tomorrow as a double bill with Bad Neighbours 2. But I had a thought this morning, and as I say, my list's always in flux, and I can imagine Civil War perhaps changing its position depending on repeat viewings and times, but I've put together my actually top 13 Marvel movies when I was thinking, right, where would I place this all? So instead of giving you my kind of Captain America ranking, I'm going to give you my Marvel Universe ranking. So, at 13, it's Thor, The Dark World. In at 12, it's Iron Man 2. At 11, it's Age of Ultron. At 10, not quite, The Incredible Hulk. At 9, it's Ant-Man. At 8, Iron Man 3. At 7, he's the God of Thunder, Thor. At 6, it's the debut entry to Marvel, Iron Man. At 5, Avengers Assemble. Number 4, Civil War. 3, The Guardians of the Galaxy. 2, Captain America, The First Avenger. And at 1, Captain America, The Winter Soldier.
So it's at number 4 for you now, but would it be safe to say that at least those top 5 are quite good on your list?
That top 4...
Just because it happens to be at number 4 doesn't mean it's
bad. Yeah, yeah. Like, you know, it's like, take James Bond, for example. Like, all these movies... Something being at number 4 still means it's incredibly good. At the moment, I would probably give it a you know, the problem with Marvel movies is you can't almost vote for them or rate them as separate movies. So I think of them in relation to, you know, the other ones. And I, obviously, the Winter Soldier commentary, I love Winter Soldier. It's such an incredible movie. The first Avenger was a movie I've grown to love so much over the years. And I just think it's got some of my favourite Marvel moments. While I really, really enjoy Civil War, I think I need a couple more repeat viewings and just to spend a bit of time getting to know it, thinking about it in relation to everything, that it's still really fresh in my mind. And I think in time we'll know where things rank a bit better.
But it would be safe to say that this is not going to be another Spectre for you, in the sense that when this again, you're going to dislike it.
No, I went in to see Spectre, and the denial already was kicking in, like, this isn't very good. And I came out of, and you'll hear it when you listen to our little recordings at the end of this podcast, how I felt coming out of the movie. And while I was very tired, you can tell how much I really enjoyed that movie. So yeah, the only way that Civil War can change, as far as I'm concerned, in the rankings, is it can only go up. I can't see me on repeat viewings ranking this any further down. So time will tell. We'll come back in a year, maybe discuss it. But I really, really enjoy Civil War, and I can't recommend it highly enough. That when I came out of that movie, I enjoyed it. I was smiling. I thought I learned so much. I really enjoyed the conflict, the acting, the direction, the choices, the confidence. I think of another superhero conflict movie I came out of a month earlier, and I felt like I was going off to a funeral. This movie laughs in the face of Batman v Superman. It gives the finger to Zack Snyder. I know people love these movies. I'm not taking that away. But when you think of the flaws of Batman v Superman, Civil War shows it how to do a conflict movie and how to do it well. And I really think people will enjoy Civil War on Christmas days, will enjoy it from birthday parties. Though people will enjoy it as just chilling out, having a marathon weekend one day. There's so much to get from this movie. I want to watch it again. I want to see it again. I want to talk about it again. I don't want to feel like I've come out of a funeral again. So, yeah, check it out.
Definitely. And I'm so happy that I can, you know, after 2 years of anticipation, the hype didn't let me down. That's a good feeling. It's something that I haven't felt in a while. So that kind of does it for our Civil War discussion. We both love the movie. Go see it. You'll hear our little bonus tags at the end of this episode. But until then, if you want to reach me, you can reach me on Twitter at mhanson0207. Lee, where can they reach you?
Yeah, they can find me on Twitter at Lee_Nostromo. We've got some other great podcasts out there. We've got Nerd Nuptial with Tristan and the girl. They were talking about, was it High Rise this week? Do not listen to them. High Rise is great. So before Tristan gags me, it's great. Go see it. I want to hug it. I don't want to break its legs. We had Jedi Masters. They came together for aggressive negotiations with us, and they produced a Star Wars audio commentary for May 4th. You want to check that out. It was so much fun to take part in. I listened to it this week, and I found myself nodding along with every one of my opinions on it. So let me know what you think of that too. And then there's the Senate Floor, where you and Tristan had a great chat about digital media versus hardcore media, which I think is a debate that will rage as long as Captain America and Iron Man, so that's worth checking out. So, you know, please leave us a 5-star review, any kind of review. We love hearing your feedback. We enjoy doing this, but hearing what you guys think always makes it worth the time. You can follow us now on Twitter. We've got an account at Join Nerd Party, so that's continuing to grow. Search for the Nerd Party on Facebook. We're everywhere now, I think, so there's plenty of places to get in touch with us. Let us know your feedback, what you thought of Captain America, whether you're a Batman v Superman fanboy and think that we shouldn't have been talking about it. You can find loads of ways to get in touch with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you so much for joining us for this special extra long discussion on Captain America Civil War. Until next time, Avengers disassemble.
Okay, this is 3 a.m. I've been sitting watching Captain America movies since 2 a.m. I've been at the marathon. I'm just out of the movie. And firstly, I'm stunned. The amount of times I've said on this podcast that British cinema audiences don't clap. They clapped
at the end of the movie and then at the end of the credits. Unbelievable. Yeah, so now I'm just in the door, shattered, I can't wait to go to bed. I'm up at 7 a.m, but that movie was fantastic. It's such good fun. I can't wait to talk about this in a couple of weeks' time. The airport scene alone is going to go down in history as one of the best comic book action beats. It just gets it. The Russo brothers, so many times in this movie, get these characters. The movie does so, so well because it focuses on clear motivations and a clear plot. The plot of Civil War is nothing relatively new. You know, it's a lot in common with the Manchurian Candidate, for example. But it tells a simple plot well. If they have all these characters and they muddle the plot, then it gets all bogged down. But it's so clear, it's to the point, it's so enjoyable. I never once doubted anyone's motivations. It was so clear. The main villain, Daniel Brühl, who's fantastic and doesn't have the biggest role, but he's an enabler. And it's almost, when you watch this movie, you look back and think, Batman v Superman and this have so much in common, not just being at the same time, but they do it so differently. And the execution is so clear, and it's all to the point. And you come out of it, like, I just think that was fantastic, and I can't wait to talk. It's going to be probably about a week and a half before we can even podcast this because of the American time difference, but that was such an enjoyable film. You know, for a long running time, I never noticed the running time, and yeah, I can't wait to see that again. The thing that's going to be for me is straight to bed, but rest assured, that was a fantastic film.
Hey everyone, so Matt here, and it's 1:53 in the morning. I just got back from my all-day Captain America marathon where I saw Civil War for the first time. And, well, first of all, I should tell you that immediately after I saw it the first time, I bought a ticket and went back 45 minutes later, so that should tell you something. But I'm just still processing this whole film because, wow, there's a lot of stuff that happens in it and a lot of heavy stuff too, but it never feels like it's too much. And that's the biggest thing that I come away with this film, is that, you know, last year with Age of Ultron, a lot of people felt that Joss Whedon kind of went overboard with too many things going on in the same movie, and certainly that could have been a problem here, but somehow the Russos found a perfect balance. And you know, even though there's all these Avengers in this movie specifically, it still feels like a Cap movie to me. He is the main character. He does push the story forward. That being said, though, I think that everyone's on top of their game in this movie. I'm sure we're going to go into it more in depth, but I mean, even, you know, especially Downey. I mean, this is probably the best performance he's given as Iron Man since probably the first movie. I dare say it's better than the first movie. Loved just about everything. I, of course, I'm going to have to go to bed and process these thoughts. But, definitely want to mention Black Panther and Spider-Man. Both were amazing, and the airport sequence was everything that I was told it would be. It's worth the price of admission alone. This is just kind of like my word vomit thoughts at this moment, but stick around for the filibuster and you'll get a much better in-depth analysis. But until then, see you at the theaters.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
There are good decisions, there are bad decisions, and then there are the ones you shouldn't have to make at all. With a Barclays Business Account, a price promise means we'll proactively switch you to the best business tariff each year. We just think that's business common sense. To find out about moving your business account to Barclays, visit us in branch or go online at barclays.co.uk/businesscommonsense. Terms and conditions apply. Only available on selected price plans.